This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report. It's the 4th of September 2009, and I'm joined once again by regular guest Bob Chapman. Bob Chapman was the largest silver and gold stockbroker in the world before his retirement in the 1980s, and currently writes the International Forecaster, a newsletter of financial, economic, political, and social commentary, which can be found at theinternationalforecaster.com. Bob Chapman, thanks for joining us once again on the program.
Well, thank you for having me, and it's a joy to be back.
All right. Well, Mr. Chapman, let's start on something of a positive note. You opened the latest edition of the newsletter with the bold statement that, quote, the Illuminists are desperate, end quote. Can you go through some of the reasons you think this is the case and how this affects you and me?
Well, first of all, one has to accept the premise that the Illuminists have done what we're experiencing deliberately. And the reason for that, at least from my viewpoint, is that they want us to all accept world government worldwide. And, of course, the keys are the United States and Western Europe. And so they're sort of zeroing in on those two areas to make things difficult. And they have to be very, very careful in doing this because they don't want people to know what they're doing. And if they get exposed, they're liable to be some real serious repercussions. Well, what's happening is through programs like the Corbett Report and others, and through the internet, that people are finding out that there's a good possibility that they, in fact, have deliberately caused this. And so the Illuminists are running around in circles saying, well, gee, what are we going to do? It came up at the Bilderberg meeting in June in Greece, and the commentary per Danny Eslin was that, well, what do we do? Well, we're losing control of this thing, and too many people are finding out what we're doing, what's the solution? And the solution was to try to shut down the fall in the world markets and reverse things so that they get better. The problem, from their point of view, is they can't control it. They lost control once they went forward in June of 2002, and they went on this bent, so to speak. And since then, things have got progressively worse in relation to them being discovered as to what they've done, or in the timing itself. Everything's gone haywire for them, as far as I'm concerned, perhaps with the exception of the transference of wealth by debt to the American taxpayer to the banks and the brokerage firms and the insurance companies and others, not only in America, throughout the world. And that's worked very well for them, even though professionals and some others realize what they've done. The general public really doesn't, unless they listen to programs like the Corbett Report. And so I think that they have this feeling that we're losing control. And it's not only in that area. We have a swine flu bogus epidemic on its way. They already know about half the people are going to refuse the shots. Why? Because of the same sources I cited before. That's a problem for them. And we're getting word out right now that they have been experimenting with this vaccine with military people all over the world at U.S. bases and on ships. I do a program on Thursday, which was yesterday, and I had a call in from a woman whose husband is on a ship. And when they left San Diego 22 days ago, they quarantined the ship, shot everybody up, and her husband reached her about 2 days after they were out and said 20% of the people are down with the swine flu. And she hasn't heard from him since. So this is what government's doing. And what they obviously are doing is either one of two things. They've got a vaccine that doesn't work very well, or they have put live vaccine in a certain percentage of the shots to see what the reactions are, whether they're death, whether it spreads, etc. And so this is what the government's going through, and they don't want the people to know that. Well, the people are finding out because of programs like this. And so consequently, that has caused them another problem. Another problem is they're having a heck of a time trying to keep the dollar index up. In other words, the dollar is progressively getting weaker, and they would wish it would be otherwise. And that's causing them problems. So they are off balance, even though they're going ahead with their programs. For us, that's good news.
Absolutely, it is, I guess. And just to go back on something you said there, I think that was a key point where you pointed out, basically, among the economic realists, and I guess I would oppose that to the Jim Cramers and the other puppet mouthpieces of the establishment out there, but among the economic realists like yourself and Peter Schiff and others, there are basically two camps. And I guess the first camp is the camp that believes that this collapse was deliberately and purposefully engineered in order to bring about the banker's dream of one world financial system. And then the other camp thinks that it was a matter of some of the Wall Street and City of London players getting carried away on their own greed. Now, I agree with you. I think also it was brought about deliberately and engineered on purpose. But I'd be interested to pick your brain from your perspective and your experience. How exactly was this engineered, and what were some of the key steps?
Well, I think the key steps were, first, the dot-com craze, which weakened the market badly. And then we were in recession. And then all of a sudden we pulled up because we had very low interest rates, and banks were, and other lenders were, giving loans to people who really shouldn't have had them. And, of course, the rating system on the bonds that were created, the collateralized debt obligations on the CDOs, created a problem as well. That's why they call toxic waste. And so we had these things, confluence, right after we went through the terrible fallout in the market. Incidentally, we got everybody out of the market at the top in the first 2 weeks of April of 2000. And then later on, they allowed this bubble to be created in real estate. And they figured they could wrap it all up by being able to implement the downside to markets and real estate and other assets, and over time manipulate it so that it would happen when they wanted it to happen. And right now we're seeing they're not ready yet because they continue to pump money and credit into the economy. And as long as they're doing that, they're offsetting the deflationary undertow, and maybe then some. And I think we're going to see then some very shortly in higher inflation. But at some point, they're going to pull the plug and go into a deflationary depression. And that's going to be covered by things like planned events like the swine flu epidemic or another 9/11, the collapse of the dollar, maybe bank holidays. There's a whole confluence of things that they can do. Now, I see at the G20 meeting, which is happening starting today, that they're talking about withdrawing the stimulus and moving interest rates back up. I want to tell you something. The minute they do that, the whole thing is going to collapse. And they know that. So they must be getting close here to doing what they want to do. What's close? Within the next 2.5 years, maybe in the next 6 months. And what are they going to do? They're going to eventually let deflation take over. And that's what's going to happen out into the intermediate future.
So it seems that the collapse is happening, and they are making that happen. But as you say, the establishment is kind of running around with its head cut off, trying to stem the tide of information exposing what's really going on and overthrowing their system. In a way, this I agree this is a good thing insofar as our enemy is frantic and vulnerable. But on the other hand, it means that the system is in such a mess that it may just come crashing down and crush all of us. So I guess the question is, are you an optimist or a pessimist?
I am a pessimist, unfortunately. And as far as saving what assets you have, the only way I can see in doing that is being in gold and silver-related assets. I see no other avenue for protection, for wealth restoration. And we're seeing that now with gold prices approaching $1,000 again. And so for those of you who want to know where to hide that do have wealth, that's where you go.
As people have always gone and always will go when they know what's good for them, I suppose. Well, let me bring
up... made it easy for me.
Well, let me bring up one of my favorite lines from this Wednesday's edition of the newsletter. You wrote, quote, "Not only will the Federal Reserve Transparency Act, H.R. 1207, pass the House, but also it will pass the Senate because you are going to write every senator demanding that they pass it." I love that line. I think it's great because it sums up the incredible groundswell of awareness of the Federal Reserve System and also the way that it can be defeated. So I take it that your idea is not that the average person listening out there is just helpless in the face of these world events.
No, they're not. They still have that avenue open. Whether it'll work or not remains to be seen. And that is go to the House of Representatives and the Senate and express yourself. They did that with the House, H.R. 1207, which is the bill to investigate the Federal Reserve, is going to be brought out onto the floor. What amendments will be attached to it, I don't know, but it will be passed. And so it's time to go to the Senate and tell the Senate, look, we want this thing passed. And if enough people do that, the senators are going to say, well, gee, I want to get reelected. I better vote for this thing. There's 23 sponsors in the Senate, and of course they need more than 50 to pass it. But that's positive. The avenue is still open. The question is, will it work? And if it works, we got a real good shot at turning this thing around. If it doesn't work, we get some serious problems.
Well, that's true, but also it's almost like Ron Paul's presidential campaign itself. It failed in the sense that he didn't become president, but it was an outstanding success insofar as it injected real issues into the campaign and demonstrated that Ron Paul and the people that he was associated with had a deeper understanding of the economy and its underlying, I guess, precarious nature, much deeper than either McCain or Obama were ever able to demonstrate. And I think that only helped to add to the credibility. And I think in the same way, even if H.R. 1207 doesn't pass, if it gets defeated, I think that will also help to expose the real agenda, and I think it will lead to a reaction. The public will be furious as to why the Federal Reserve can't be audited.
Well, I hadn't thought about that flip side of that, and you may very well be right. So we may be winners either way. I hope you're right, because the consequences are terrible to contemplate. And, we have a good system. It's just that it hasn't been working for us, and maybe we can make it work. And so it's not hope springing eternal. It's using the tools that we've got to make something happen.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think that leads back to what you were saying earlier, that it is the alternative media getting the word out that is going to have that effect. Because, if the controlled corporate media is allowed to spin H.R. 1207, whether it passes or doesn't pass through the House or the Senate, then either way, they get to control the debate. But if the alternative media is the one that's taking the reins, then obviously we get to inject our own issues and our own side into the debate, which is really the key thing, I think, for grabbing people's mind. And we've reached just such an incredible age with the internet and other forms of alternative media just breaking the controlled corporate media paradigm that I think perhaps for the first time we really do have the chance to actually frame the debate on our own terms without that corporate media intervention.
You're absolutely correct. And I think it began about 2 years ago. That's kind of a feeling. And that's when I felt it was starting to change in our favor. And I was amazed. I didn't think we'd make it, but I think we have. And that's why you saw the reactions that we were exposed to at the town hall meetings in regard to the medical reform bill and other things that were discussed at those meetings. I mean, even Barney Frank had to go head-to-head at one of his meetings where people were asking about the H.R. 1207, which he had bottled up in committee. I think he was thunderstruck that people, and I saw the tape, and of course I ran it in the International Forecaster. I think he was amazed that someone would bring it up at his meeting, and I could tell by the look on his face. And on top of that, the person, the young man who talked about it, was extremely knowledgeable. And he's probably thinking, Mr. Frank was probably thinking to himself, gee, I've got some serious problems. These people understand what's going on. And so I think we've come a long way, and I think we've got a good shot at it. We just got to keep working at it.
Well, when you say we've come a long way, I think obviously that's an advised comment, because perhaps my listeners aren't really aware of your own remarkable life story and your background, but you have had an incredible background, and some of the interesting experiences you've had have definitely, I assume, helped shape that outlook that you have now. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became aware of the New World Order?
Well, it came to my attention that everything wasn't right when I was working in counterintelligence, and of course I was recruited to stay in there, either in the Army counterintelligence or work directly for the NSA or for the Central Intelligence Agency, both of which I turned down. Although Porter Goss, who had the same training and did the same thing I did, took it, and he ended up being the head of the Central Intelligence Agency, and quite frankly, I'm smarter than he is. But anyway, it's neither here nor there. But that's how I found out, especially the first time I walked in. They handed me a book called The War in Ether, which means a war in space, so to speak, via intercept of communications. And I found out right off that the Japanese diplomatic code had been broken in 1937 by both MI6, which is a CIA equivalent in England, and OSS, the Naval Intelligence of the United States. So they knew exactly what the Japanese were doing when they were coming to Pearl Harbor. They just lined the ships up for them. When I saw that, I said, hey, there's lots that I don't know about what's going on here. And, of course, it was expanded over the several years I was involved. And then in the early 60s, I became involved in educating people, just as we are today. You might call it politics, but it was quasi-politics, and running around with pamphlets about the UN and the Fed and things like that, and trying to bring the left and the right together, because I thought it was a big phony baloney deal, and as it turns out, people are now realizing that there's only one party, and that's run by a bunch of people from behind the scenes. And so I and others like G. Edward Griffith and Gary Allen, who was my partner, who wrote An Idea Called a Conspiracy, and Ed wrote The Creature from Jekyll Island, Alan Stang, who wrote a number of books and unfortunately recently died, and we kind of were the musketeers of the early age, along with a handful of other people, almost all of whom are deceased by now, worked on this for 50 years. So when I say, finally, we've turned the tables, and thank goodness for the internet and programs like the Corbett Report, we can do it today. And it was very lonely work back in the 60s.
I can imagine it was, but it must be so satisfying to see that work bear such incredible fruit, as idea of liberty and freedom and the exposure and awareness of the people behind the scenes is really taking sort of center stage in public opinion. And it must be incredible to see that coming to fruition. But it's also interesting to hear that something that helped to wake you up to this was the if not false flag attack, at least the attack, which wasn't what it seemed, at Pearl Harbor, whereas people in the younger generation like myself, probably their first peek behind the curtains was taking a look at 9/11. So again, these big monumental attacks, which are often used to further their agenda, also backfire as people start to expose the lies behind them.
That's right. And as, you know, history is replete with these things. You've just got to investigate far enough to find out that everything isn't the way it seems to be. They call it revisionist history, when in fact, it's real history, and what you're revising is all the lies that people have been told. I mean, they even pulled this stuff on Adolf Hitler by sucking him into going to Poland, because the Russians were moving in Eastern Europe. And the Russians blamed the British and the French for leaving them alone to face Germany, when in fact, the French and the English were goading Germany to go into Poland so they could declare war against them. I mean, there's a whole section of facts that have never been brought to the public's attention.
on so many issues. But yeah, I guess we're slowly and steadily working to expose some of the main ones. Well, as you say, obviously things have progressed to a much different level since those days when you were starting off with the other musketeers like J. Edward Griffin and Gary Allen. But what is your overall sense of how deep we are into the New World Order's planned one world financial system and cashless society control grid? And also, how likely do you think it is at this point that we will be able to expose it in time to stop it from taking place at all?
Well, that's a work in process, but I would say they're 60 to 70% into what they intend to do. And looking down the road, the rest of what they would like to accomplish could be accomplished in the next 4 or 5 years. And I think that's what their goal is, without exposure. But, you know, every day we get programs like this going out, and a great many of the letters that I get are from all over the world. I had one from Sweden this morning, and the letter's going into the International Forecaster, and, Norway, it was from Norway, explaining all about the Bilderbergers within the government in the same kind of things that we talk about American and European participants, but nobody ever hears about Norway. Well, the two people who are running for the presidency, one of which is a lady, they're both Bilderberger attendees. And so, you know, the gentleman who wrote the letter said, so what's the sense in voting? And so people are waking up worldwide, everywhere. And that tells me that they're going to have one heck of a hard time trying to stuff down the throats of humanity one world government. And so they're going towards it. Whether they're going to try to pull back or going to be successful in pulling back and reining this thing in and trying it at another time remains to be seen. But even if they do that, there's enough information available now and going out over the airwaves that I think it would be a mistake for them to pull back. They either go for the whole thing, the whole enchilada, or they're going to lose it anyway. And they don't want to be exposed because they're going to be tried mostly for treason. And they're going to lose their fortunes, and all of this is going to be exposed in society, and it's going to put them back another couple of hundred years. And so I think we're making great headway, and I think we can do it.
Well, I certainly hope that's the case, and but I am worried that you say that you think that the rest of the New World Order control grid plan could be slotted into place in the next 3 to 5 years. What do you think would be some of the key steps on the way?
Well, a form of people control, like they're accumulating all these databases, and perhaps forcing everybody onto a debit card. Whereas if you had a program like the Corbett Report and you spoke about government in the way that we do, your debit card wouldn't work for you. And if people didn't give you food to eat or pay for your rent or whatever, then you wouldn't be able to exist. And that's a powerful thing. And that is one of the things I think they're strongly after. This is part and parcel of the reining in of assets. This is why the U.S. and others, but particularly the U.S., are after these tax havens. And the reason why they're after them is they want to know where everybody's money is, because they feel that all of the wealth that Americans have was created by them and belongs to them. It does not belong to you. You got to get inside their heads. You have to understand how they think. It's just like a policeman dealing with a criminal. In order to understand the criminal, you must understand and get into the criminal mind. We're dealing with criminals on a very, very high plane. And these people don't rob banks. They rob countries and peoples. And so you have to be able to understand what they're doing. And the understanding is what's going to bring what they're doing to a halt. But I think that's one of the main things they want to do, and they can do it a number of ways, by having these false flag attacks like bogus swine flu epidemics, which they created, which in fact is the case. And they've done it before, and hopefully they'll not do it again. And so controlling people's wealth controlling their access to wealth or money is a way of controlling people, the strongest way. And I think that will be the number one thing on their agenda. And, of course, it comes along with ID cards if you want to travel from New York State to New Jersey and go over the George Washington Bridge, that's fine. But you're going to have to check in and let everybody know that you flashed your ID card so it goes into the computer. And Bob and Jim went over the bridge to New Jersey to see a football game or whatever. This is what they want to be able to do. It's a totalitarian society, and that's what they're looking for.
Well, your analysis dovetails absolutely perfectly with mine, because I also recognize that this technology that already exists and is now just being introduced incrementally to the public really is the technology which will allow their system to take place at all. So that's something that I'm trying to warn my listeners about as much as possible. But drawing the net a little bit closer into the boat, what do you see coming along in the next week or two that might be some big stories to follow?
Well, I think we're going to see an attack by gold at $1,000 an ounce and silver at $20. I see a lower dollar, and I look at things basically more than anything in temporally from a financial point of view. I see great consternation coming about these swine flu shots. There's going to be all sorts of conflict going on. Massachusetts and Iowa have decided to essentially criminalize you if you won't take the shots, and they'll quarantine you probably at one of these government concentration camps. And Massachusetts says that they'll fine you $1,000 for every day that you don't take the shots, and all kinds of stupid things like that. And that's really, really going to get a good part of the population up in arms. Probably two-thirds of the people are just going to get up on their hind legs and say, I'm not going to do that. So that is a pending problem. But I think those three are the three strongest. I was looking for, starting in May, the possibility of a beta test on a bank holiday, say, stretching from Thursday afternoon to Tuesday morning or something like that. And I don't think they're going to do it. And the reason why is the conflicts that I just described. But on top of that, we've got a 41 rating for the president on one of the polls for approval, down from 70. And the Congress is 12. And they're in serious trouble. They're going to have a hard time getting past their medical reform package in anywhere near the form that they wanted, if they get it at all. Cap and trade has run into a real buzzsaw in the Senate. And they're very, very weakened. It's not only the Democratic Party, but politicians in general. They're very, very weakened from the circumstances that they've had to face since the last election, and even before that as well. And so I think they're going to be very careful what they do. I think they saw 1207 as a real positive for them, because let's blame it on the bankers, and we can score some great points at home with this thing. And that's why the House came up with 282 members who co-sponsored it, because they're looking for something positive to hang their hat on. Otherwise, the constituents are mad about everything that they've done otherwise. And so I don't think they're going to have their bank holiday as a beta test.
Well, I certainly hope not. That is always one of the tricks up the sleeve, but I would hopefully agree with your assessment that that's not going to happen. Well, there are a lot of really dire things happening at the moment, but it seems there is also a lot of positivity, and that's something for us to look at as well. Well, Bob Chapman, tell us again about the website and the newsletter.
Well, the International Forecaster is about business, finance, economic, social, political issues all over the world. We publish by email on Wednesdays and Saturdays, runs around 35 or 40 pages each time. And we have a hard copy, which goes out twice a month for people who are not on the Internet. You can get a free introductory copy of either by going to the site, which is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International FORECASTER.com, or you can call 800-375-4255. 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188 for those of you in particular who are not on the internet. Or you can email me, and we answer all questions if you want to send a note. And that address is Bob, B-O-B, at intforecaster.com. Bob at intforecaster.com.
All right, Bob Chapman, a pleasure as always to have you on the program. Thank you once again for joining me.
Thank you, and I'll see you again soon.